Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. Tonight, we listen to your voicemails. And now, let's join Dan to discuss Night Sisters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network. I hope everybody enjoyed the time off, and more importantly, I hope everyone is enjoying the return into Clone Wars Season 3 with Night Sisters. I, for one, am starting to believe the hype about Season 3.5, because this was a very exciting episode. But don't take my word for it. I'm not the only one here tonight. With me tonight is Jen.
Hello.
Jerry.
Hey, guys.
And Nathan P. Butler from Star Wars Fanworks and a plethora of other things.
Hello, all.
Once again, we are going to be here talking about Night Sisters, episode 12 of season 3, written by Katie Lucas, and a fabulous job, I must say. But before we get into my opinions on it, let's go down the line and see what everybody thought of this week's episode. Jen, why don't you start us off?
This episode blew me away. This is amazing. Like, usually there's something that I find like annoying in an episode or something I can nitpick, or even if I like it, I have nothing. This is just, my jaw was on the floor the whole time. I loved it. Everything.
All right. Jerry?
You know, Jen, I'm with you. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. And I have to admit, this is probably of interest to no one other than me, but I resubscribed to having DirecTV. So I actually got to watch this on a large screen versus just waiting for the iTunes to come out the next day. But this show, I thought, looked great. It was a fun story. I don't know a lot about the EU background of Asajj Ventress or Dathomir, the Night Sisters. And quite frankly, you know, I'm interested in hearing about it in Continuity Corner. But what I got was a great start to what, you know, maybe consistent or inconsistent or whatever. But I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was great. I can't wait to the next two episodes.
All right. Nathan.
Well, you know, I do know a lot about the background of Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters and Dathomir. And I really liked the episode as well. It wound up blending a lot of EU that previously existed with a slightly different new take coming from Katie Lucas on behalf of George Lucas. I think that was really, really well done. It was a fun episode, and it hit actually right after I had watched Dead Space Downfall for about the fifth or sixth time in the time since it's been out, and went through and watched the newest episode of G.I. Joe Renegades, only to realize that Nika Futterman, who plays Ventress, played the main character on Downfall and plays Lady J on the new G.I. Joe series. And I have to say, the performance in this episode and hearing those different types of voices coming from her in those all within about a day of each other, I'm really growing in my appreciation for her particular voice acting talents. She was one of those that never really felt like she was standing out to me, because I think the only thing I'd really recognized her as was Ventress, but there's a lot of range there that hopefully they're going to explore over the next couple of episodes, and hopefully they'll keep up the EU blending as opposed to EU breaking in the future.
All right. Thank you, Nathan. Yeah, I'm with everybody. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and like Nathan, I'm maybe not as familiar with the EU, but I am fairly familiar with it, and Asajj's backstory, and I really felt like Kate Lucas really respected the EU that has come before. She may have tweaked it a little bit, given it her own spin, put her own new color on it, but it was fairly true to what we know Asajj has come from. And, I mean, from the get-go, we saw Asajj's ship that we saw in the original Clone Wars micro-series. So right away, you see that she is sticking to stuff that has come before, and that was really impressive. All in all, it was a great story. Hearing the Sith witches talk was freaking spooky. Six voices at the same time in different places and surround sounds. Very awesome.
I like the fact that Dave Filoni went on his commentary and specifically was all raving in positive ways about Katie Lucas doing so. I like to think of it as a way of saying, see, this 22, 23-year-old woman just managed to fit continuity way better than we ever have.
Dan, I'm like you. I really enjoyed the fact that they brought back Asajj Ventress's ship from the Tartakovsky series. I mean, that was just, you know, punch in the face obvious. And but still, when I saw it, I think I even said out loud, it's like, wow, that was the same ship from the Micro series, as if anybody in my family who was watching it with me had any clue what I was talking about. But I thought that was a really great nod, because I thought it was a pretty interesting ship that they used there. And not sure if we've ever seen it since. And, you know, maybe we'll do that in Continuity Corner. But I thought that was a really good throwback. I'm glad to see that tie-in like that, whether that's an intentional tie-in per se, or just the fact that, hey, it's a cool ship, why create a new one?
All right, before we get too far in, let's get a quick plot summary of this week's episode. Once again, Season 3, Episode 12, Night Sisters. Our fortune cookie reads, "The swiftest path to destruction is through vengeance." We join a large space battle over Sullust between Republic forces and a Separatist fleet led by Asajj Ventress. We see the Separatists begin to get the upper hand. Meanwhile, Dooku gets a call from Darth Sidious with some unfortunate news about Asajj's Separatist retirement plan.
Eliminate her.
She's my most trusted.
I said, eliminate her.
As you wish, my lord.
Back over Sullust, Asajj is doing some serious damage to Obi-Wan while taking some shots from Anakin herself. When all three crash into the Separatist flagship hangar, she calls Dooku for help, but gets an all-too-familiar message.
You have failed me for the last time.
As Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ventress engage in a savage lightsaber battle, Dooku contacts a tactical droid over the fleet and commands it to open fire on the command ship and eliminate all on board. As the tide turns back and forth between Asajj and the Jedi, a hyena bomber droid crashes into the hangar where the three are fighting. Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Asajj narrowly escape the dying command ship, and the droid sensors pick up no life readings in the wreckage. Believing Asajj dead, Dooku gives Sidious a call.
Asajj Ventress is dead.
However, Asajj Ventress is not dead. The salvage ship picks up the wreckage of her ship among the debris from the battle, and when they try to threaten her, the salvagers learn that you shouldn't question a cranky Sith. Taking over the ship, Ventress travels to Dathomir. Upon landing, she is surrounded by Night Sisters, and as her strength gives out, she is greeted by Mother Talzin. As she is healed by the Waters of Life, we are treated to the highlight reel of Asajj's past. We learn she was born a Night Sister, but given away to slavers to protect the clan. Then, when her slave master was killed, she was found by a Jedi who trained her. However, when she was killed, she fell from the light, giving in to her anger. Then we see her being contacted by Dooku, and ultimately betrayed by him. When she awakens, Mother Talzin assigns two warriors to help her, and makes a potion to turn the three nearly invisible, giving them a poison dart to dull Dooku's senses and Jedi lightsabers to confuse and make him believe he's under attack by Jedi. Mother Talzin dispatches the three to make an attempt on Dooku's life. At Dooku's palace, the three Night Sisters make their way into his private chambers, and after injecting him with the dart, they attack. And for a time, it seems as if they may prevail. However, with a burst of Force lightning, Dooku turns the tables and launches the three out of the window. Reporting back their failure to Mother Talzin, we find she isn't disappointed, or really even all that surprised.
Where one sees failure, others see opportunity.
Mother Talzin plans to offer Dooku a male of their kind.
Since you could not tame the female.
And, after Dooku agrees, Asajj again swears her vengeance. So now let's begin our discussion of Night Sisters. As we said, right away we come into the thick of a space battle. Ships flying and exploding right and left all over the place.
You know, can I toss out a ship question here? Because this was something that got me excited. But it's something that happened so quickly, I wonder if most people missed it. Did you guys notice that the Resolute got destroyed at the beginning of this episode? I mean, Ulurin's okay, but the Resolute got blown to smithereens and stuff, and they're actually saying it is the Resolute, not that it was some other ship that Ulurin happened to be commanding. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. That's been the ship since the beginning, even prior to the film with those flashback episodes.
And haven't they made a point of saying, yes, a Resolute got destroyed before, but not the Resolute, and now we know the Resolute just got destroyed?
Well, it's like every other time, it was always like, okay, here's the Resolute, and here's those normal sister ships. Now, those sister ships are somehow absent, and here's these other sister ships. Now, they get destroyed, and now here the original ones come back. Like, it seems like they've never really put the Resolute itself into direct danger. They've always made it the sister ships or something like that, but this time, here we are hearing that this really was supposed to be the Resolute, at least this week, you know, it's supposed to be the Resolute. I was excited to see that, and it happened in such a flash. It's like, that's the way big moments need to be. We need to have episodes like this crammed with so many cool, big moments that you almost have to sit back and take stock step by step of them before you realize, wow, I almost missed something.
Well, it's really cool to see that because, you know, we've talked on this show a lot about how the Separatists don't always seem like they've really got their act together and can be a true threat. But when you see something like that happen, you kind of feel like the Republic took a big loss in this battle, and kind of getting into the treachery against the Asajj Ventress, you kind of had a feeling that if Dooku wasn't under command to essentially betray or punish, however you look at, eliminate Asajj Ventress, that they could have sent in reinforcements and really had won a significant battle, a victory against the Republic in this.
The battle was actually, I thought it was really cool too. Like you were saying, Jerry, I felt like there was actually some tension, some concern for the Republic this time, whereas usually the Separatists are made out to be almost like this snidely whiplash, really fail at life type of villain, or in this case, organization. I felt like they were really kind of kicking a lot of butt here, and if Dooku had not been messing around, and if Sidious hadn't been pulling the strings behind the scenes, they probably could have done even more damage. It's interesting. I like that.
Jen, you raised a point that I thought about the second time that I watched this through. The Separatists were doing amazing. They were dangerously close to really doing some damage, taking out Obi-Wan, maybe even Anakin, until the call came through from Sidious to Dooku to cut him off, not help Ventress out, everybody back out and open fire on her. Now, was this a call that Sidious made because he was on the phone with the high-ups in the Republic and knew how the battle was going for them? Did he do this to save Anakin? Or was it all just because the Asajj was getting too close? That's just something that popped out at me second time through. But really, she was doing awesome. She very well could have at least eliminated Obi-Wan had she gotten the support that she needed.
You know, Dan, I think that's a really good point. I guess it's easy to forget that Palpatine, even when he throws on the cloak and he becomes Sidious, he's still, at the end of the day, rooting for the Republic ultimately. That's what he really wants to win. He's not just sitting back and seeing who wins and he'll use the winner as his real army. He really wants the clones at his disposal. He wants the Jedi destroyed. So he's rooting for the Republic to win, but to make the Jedi the scapegoat. And doesn't want to set the Separatists up to have these major victories. With that, you know, that being said, I think that's a good point too. He has to make sure that Anakin, he wants to maintain Anakin as his next apprentice. That seems like that's been his plan all along.
And speaking of maintaining Anakin as his next apprentice, I thought it was very interesting, skipping ahead a little bit, but how Sidious was kind of getting wind of maybe that Dooku might have been planning something similar. We've established that the Sith are very treacherous, and how, I know at least in the novel version of Revenge of the Sith, Anakin's already plotting to start maybe overthrowing Sidious and having his, you know, be the shining star in the galaxy and him being the one in charge. And I like that Sidious is sneaky enough and intelligent enough that he's kind of trying to snuff that kind of behavior out with Dooku before he even has a chance. I thought that was kind of impressive.
Yeah, that's one thing that has been asked a couple of times on forums, and I don't think there is an easy answer for it yet. People asking, well, wait a second, they use the word apprentice when referring to Asajj Ventress, not acolyte or whatever. And I'm assuming they're talking apprentice like lowercase a. You know, she is the one you are training, therefore she could be your Sith apprentice to come after me, that sort of thing, when Sidious is speaking. But there's been a lot of argument as to, well, based on the terminology there, is it possible that this is a breaking already of the rule of two? And it depends on your point of view. We've never really seen this too much with George Lucas himself creating this other apprentice to sort of possibly destroy that rule of two, or at least sort of shift around the rule of two so that here's the next two while the current two are already there. But, I mean, Darth Vader had, what, 11 apprentices or something like that, if you don't count Ahsoka over the years, something weird like that. So in the EU, it's not something surprising, but I have noticed that those who aren't as focused on EU stuff heard that word apprentice and started to get a little concerned about how this fit in with the rule of two. We just, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see which direction Lucas takes that, or if that was just a word drop that wasn't meant to have the resonance that some people took it as.
Yeah, because I guess one could argue that Sidious could just as easily sit back and see, okay, who's the most powerful here among a Ventress, a Dooku, and even Anakin? And might I not have a conversation with Asajj on the side and say, hey, when you get a chance, put a lightsaber in Dooku's back and you be my number one? But I don't know, maybe this also goes back to his attitude or the, you know, what we eventually see with the Empire against alien species. So I'm not really sure what her race is called, but maybe he just wouldn't, you know, even condone somebody of her species. Like, duh, I guess she's a Dathomir Night Sister now. I don't know if that's always been the case, but, you know, stupid me, I just watched the show. But maybe he wouldn't allow that to be the case. Hey, maybe he... not a fan of having a female apprentice. I don't know how that, you know, how he would feel about that too. So, I mean, maybe he just wants to take her out because of some of the prejudices that he's demonstrated as Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, how to decide. The Wina, Sinead O'Connor, or the geriatric.
So the Jedi and Asajj barely escape the ship in time. And apparently Asajj goes into a Jedi trance of sort until a salvage ship picks her up. And then apparently planning to sell her to either the other side or her superiors, the unprepared salvagers are taken out and their ship quickly taken from them. And we arrive at Dathomir, which I'm not sure if that looked like I was expecting it to look. I'm expecting jungles, and I don't think I was expecting so much red.
Oh, it looked like no one was expecting. But then again, so did Vulcan in Star Trek XI, so I'm sure there'll be some kind of explanation for it somewhere along the way.
Very true.
So, Dan, did you interpret that as a Jedi trance that she was in? I don't know. Maybe I missed something, but I just kind of assumed she was just still blacked out from
napping.
Overwhelmed and shocked, something just because of the battle she was just in. But
popped a muscle relaxer.
I think that's just what I thought of, because that's what I'm used to people doing. And we've seen Luke do it in the first Zahn trilogy. We've seen Qui-Gon Horn do it. So, I mean, when things go bad and they're adrift in space, they go into a Jedi trance until they get help or something happens or to even heal. So that's just kind of where I went.
Well, backing up a little bit, too. I mean, the one thing that did drive me a little nuts about this story was when Asajj Ventress was battling Anakin and Obi-Wan. The good news, bad news to it for me was that I liked seeing some of the power that Asajj Ventress demonstrated, that we sometimes say, hey, why don't these Jedi just do this? We know they have the power to do that. That's been kind of a running theme throughout the entire Republic Forces Radio Network life of our podcast. We always say, man, why doesn't Anakin just use the speed that he demonstrated in the movie? Why didn't he just do blah, blah, blah? But you kind of see Asajj Ventress just having this massive power. You know, she looks like she's about to get taken out by Anakin and Obi-Wan. She just force chokes him, which is kind of cool. And maybe that's because she's, you know, the dark side user of the force. But the one thing that kind of messed with me a little bit is that Anakin and Obi-Wan are just a couple feet off the ground. They're 4 feet away from Asajj Ventress with their lightsabers in hand. How hard could that have been to have gotten out of? Toss a lightsaber at her if you're about to be choked like that. It's, little things like that just kind of, you know, mess with me a little bit, because I don't like seeing Anakin and Obi-Wan kind of taken that easily when it comes to, oh, she's just going to force choke the both of them right there.
Hey, a force choke can make you lose the will to live. So they're much more powerful than you would imagine.
Well, when it's done on Padme, maybe, but...
Can you imagine if after the fight, Obi-Wan just dropped down and said, I can't do it anymore.
I actually really appreciated that she was kind of giving them a run for their money, because I feel like every episode, whenever they are encountering Asajj Ventress, she looks like a wuss. She gets trounced every single time she shows up. And I felt like this episode actually gave her a little bit of credibility and actually made her seem like the threat that they make her out to be. Because whenever she shows up, they're like, oh, it's Ventress. We gotta get her. She's a problem. We gotta take her out right away. But then they just always wipe the floor with her. So seeing her just go crazy and start force choking people, I thought that was fun. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the lightsaber fight and actually the starfighter battle too, because yeah, we know there's no way Anakin and Obi-Wan are going to die, but they were put in a couple positions in this episode where it was like, wow, how the crap are they actually going to get out of this to survive to episode 3? So I thought that was pretty good. And the lightsaber battle was pretty intense. The clever use of the force choke and them bouncing each other off the walls. That was well done. And I'm sure we'll get to this. The other lightsaber fight with invisible Asajj and Dooku was also well done. I thought the lightsaber battle was both pretty good in this episode.
That whole opening.
As an aside, I really enjoy discussing this episode with you because we saw a lot of footage of this episode, C5, and at least, you know, Dan, Jen, and I had the opportunity to do a Celebration 5 report and talked a lot about this episode. So it's kind of cool that we're watching it now, talking about it together.
You know, I think that entire first part really was reminiscent of the beginning of Revenge of the Sith. It was very reminiscent of the Genndy Tartakovsky series and the battle over Munalist. I really think they did a good job of capturing sort of both approaches, the cartoon approach from the earlier cartoons and the live action approach. The only thing I was sitting here thinking, we were just talking about, you know, Ventress going up against the two guys, thinking, you know, if only Ahsoka had been there, she would have put up a fight. Because they kind of play off of the her and Ventress rivalry every now and then. But it struck me that that's the one thing that I think maybe would have taken away. I mean, it would have been cool to see Ahsoka there against Ventress. Like maybe it was Anakin and Ahsoka, not Anakin and Obi-Wan or something. But I think the fact that she wasn't there heightened the film feel of that scene. As along with the new costumes for really all the characters. I mean, I think this is still one of the first times we see Asajj Ventress in this particular costume with the sort of concept art look to her. And of course, Anakin and Obi-Wan are in their new outfits that are closer to episode 3. So I wonder if Ahsoka would have detracted from the scene, but part of me really would like to have seen her in that intense battle against Asajj Ventress to see what she's really capable of, given the, you know, the sniping between those two we've seen before.
I thought it was really cool, Dan, like you said, how when she came to and kind of realized what was going on, that she took those pirates out real quick and then stole their ride. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Their ride, which looks an awful lot like Gannacht's ride. Why is it everybody that drives those ships dies?
Well, you know, Gannacht was a similar salvager, pirate kind of thing. He just happened to be a little bit for hire with Grievous because he was trying to get R2 or, you know, get something for Grievous. But I guess they did have similar professions.
So we arrive at Dathomir. Asajj is obviously hurt, and she's immediately surrounded by Night Sisters, some kind of ninja-looking chicks. And when they're about to take her out with their funky light bows, now, is that a new weapon, Nathan?
I personally haven't seen it before. That doesn't mean it doesn't necessarily exist. It struck me as kind of surprising, too, especially given the fact that Dathomir is often played up as being somewhat technologically primitive, that type of technology would exist. But it's kind of a nice blend between the primitive and tech. But it didn't strike me as familiar. I may have missed something somewhere along the way, though.
So she's surrounded, and just as they're about to take her out, Mother Talzin intervenes and welcomes Asajj back home. And then we are treated to a series of flashbacks where we get to see Asajj from infancy being taken, being trained, and ultimately being recruited by Dooku, which was another cool toss back to the original micro series. That was a really cool sequence.
You know, that was a sequence that made extreme use of the EU. Because we've even been told that the Jedi in those flashbacks, whose name isn't said, that is Kai Narek, the guy who was the Jedi who recruited her in the comics that we see. And there were a couple of tweaks that they did to slightly alter the story, like making her a native Dathomiri as opposed to being a native Ratataki. So she is actually allowed to have hair, which is funny because they made the Ratataki based on her saying they were all bald, which is kind of amusing. But they tweaked a few things here and there. But I think that was the moment where a lot of EU fans out there, instead of cringing like we usually would at something being introduced from the EU, we really sat back and said, wow, they actually bothered to include and started naming off things. I was very impressed by the flashback sequence. That was probably my favorite sequence of the whole thing, but I'm an EU nerd.
I was actually waiting for them to show a brief glimpse of her in that like battle arena like we saw in the Tartakovsky series, just to really tie it together. It had been unnecessary, and I'm not disappointed that wasn't there, but that would have been funny. But you're right. I was actually sitting there like you, Dan, thinking, oh, wow, hey, you know, this seems like it does parallel the encounter that we saw with them earlier, and that was really kind of cool. It did feel like they're being consistent there, even though I'm not a big expert on Ventress's background.
But she did have the same outfit from that scene with the open back and the low cut top. That was pretty cool. We may not have seen all the crazy monsters she fought, but right. She did have the outfit. That was pretty cool.
I think it was implied, though. I think that was implied that we were supposed to make that connection. And, you know, the StarWars.com and the episode guide did point out the fact that that was the same, you know, ship that she had. So, I mean, obviously they're cognizant of that. I mean, they'd have to be, obviously, since that was a cartoon series about Clone Wars. They have to be very aware of that. Whether they're accommodating for it or not, you know, clearly they're not. But at least in this one, kind of seemed like they're trying.
To piggyback on that, I felt like they were really careful with the EU for everybody, for the most part. Like with the Night Sisters, too, and Dathomir, while it didn't really look like what we expected, I kind of can write that part off. It's a whole planet. It's going to have different, you know, ecosystems and whatever. But the Night Sisters, while they didn't maybe necessarily play into exactly what I thought they should be, I still feel like they could work, maybe as like a specific group of Night Sisters. They made them seem very ethereal, very kind of creepy, very cult-like. Reminiscent of something, maybe reminded me a little bit of Indiana Jones or something, but they seemed very, not primitive, but very almost religious in the aspect of what they were doing. And I felt that really worked for them, and that the whole witches metaphor they were using, I thought that was really cool. And I feel like for the most part, it didn't really hurt anything in the EU. I felt like it could coexist pretty well instead of stomping all over it like they usually do.
I think the Night Sisters was kind of cool, especially given the fact that what many people may not know is that, unless you read the episode guide, when they were putting together the Jedi Alliance video game for the Nintendo DS, they brought in the Night Sisters just because they wanted to use the Night Sisters, and they based their design somewhat on the same concept art that created Mother Talzin. So now they show up in the series based on the game. The game having the Night Sisters was part of what inspired having them in the series at all. Apparently, at least according to the episode guide, which kind of concerns me. I would think that it would have been something they would have been interested in well before, as opposed to saying, oh, look, a video game. But that's another issue, I guess. But it's cool because the look of the characters, the stylized look of the Night Sisters as presented here, matches the presentation in that game. So they're actually willing to take the Clone Wars cartoon series and its tie-ins and do a little bit of playing it off each other. I mean, it doesn't seem like they do a lot of playing off the spin-off materials, but not only are they touching on the mainstream EU, but they at least dabbled a little bit in that kind of weird subsection of EU based on their own cartoon series, which is almost never done.
Yeah, that was really another case. And I mean, once again, hats off to Katie Lucas. She seems to have really done her homework. She is bringing so many different things that are out there together for this on these episodes, hopefully on the next two episodes as well. She's not going to get it all out in the first one and then shoot it all to crap in the next two. But I'm really confident in Katie Lucas as a storyteller for Clone Wars right now.
Hey, Nathan, how much do we think that Katie Lucas or any writer is, you know, how much responsibility do they have for preserving the EU in so much as George Lucas and Dave Filoni is just saying, hey, here's the story we want to tell. You go write the script. I mean, how much can we really attribute this to Katie specifically?
Well, I mean, Filoni has referred to previously about using things from the EU and trying to respect it and that sort of thing. It's just that it doesn't always tend to work out like that. He always uses the, well, we're telling the story we want to tell type of, I don't want to say excuse, but rationale for deviating from the EU. The way it sounds like in that video commentary up on StarWars.com is that she really took it upon herself to really do a lot of delving into doing EU research to do this. Like, that was something that needed to be praised. And granted, it does need to be praised. It was really well done. But if he's saying that she specifically is in deserving of praise because she bothered to do that much research, it makes me think that there is no real sense that the writing staff needs to do that kind of research. You know what I mean? Like, if everybody in your class is getting an A, you're not going to turn around and really applaud when Bobby gets an A because, yeah, so did everybody else. You know what I mean?
Well, it's kind of one of those things, like, I asked that question because, like, does Katie Lucas, is she more aware and better at this than her own dad, who apparently doesn't seem to give a crap about EU from time to time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think you can necessarily make the argument like that, though, because Lucas is the one who created all this stuff in the first place, and he's got his own ideas, his own vision for it, and that's not necessarily genetic. I mean, we can't expect that Katie Lucas has the same perspective on it that her father does. He has the perspective of the creator of it with the Vision. She has the perspective of someone who is perhaps trying to protect her father's legacy and the spinoff legacy of what her father created, but she herself isn't the one crafting the initial Vision. You know what I mean? I think she's in that interesting, weird place because she's George Lucas's daughter. She's caught sort of between the regular writers on the series and the creator of all that is Star Wars, but I'm not sure it's a valid comparison to say she cares more than Daddy does, even though Daddy should. It's more like, well, she's doing something maybe because she respects all that has grown out of her father's work, but not that because she does that, somehow that diminishes his right to deviate from it.
Well, I guess I look at it from the other way, because I would think that she'd be more likely to be influenced by how George approaches it. It might just be a coincidence that maybe the way George wanted this story to be told happens to be consistent with, you know, some things that have already been told beforehand, and she just kind of lucked into it. Whereas, you know, I think the comparison that, or the scenario that I think would have been very likely, is that they would have just written a brand new story and she wouldn't have researched it. But I guess that's kind of why I asked my first question, is like, who's the most influential here? Did she do the research because she needed to, because she knew what the Vision was, or was she doing the research so that she could influence the Vision? Maybe we'd never know the answer to that, but I think it is interesting actually to ask the question because of the parental link there. But
I think she's someone who has at least somewhat tried to avoid the whole concept of potential accusations of nepotism and such. I mean, she only wrote a couple of episodes earlier in the series, and it was actually something where George Lucas mentioned, well, you know, she's written two episodes of season 3 at, I think it was Celebration 5 when he mentioned that. So, I mean, there's a brief mention of it, but she wasn't someone big in the process early on. And if you remember, when she portrayed Amy, one of Anakin's friends in The Phantom Menace, she didn't go credited by her name. She went as Jenna Green. And then whenever she wound up in another film a few years later, I think it was 2005, 2006-ish, she wound up doing the same thing again. She wound up asking to have herself credited as Jenna Green, not Katie Lucas. So it seems as though she is someone who has maintained at least a little bit of that distance of her own identity. Granted, she's within the franchise now and working essentially for her father in that sense, but I'd like to think that she kind of takes that independent tack. I mean, that's just me reading into the implications of the name issue, but it certainly would be a hopeful sign as far as maybe she sticking more with the EU than others would, and maybe her being sort of the EU police when it comes to some of the story ideas that pop up, she really has that level of respect for it. Especially now, because of the Night Sisters and Asajj Ventress's background and Opress and everyone become a big part of the Clone Wars, she has now established a background for that that is mostly EU compliant, which means if they're going to be compliant with what she's created, they, by default, must be somewhat compliant with the EU.
So, she has her fabulous flashbacks, and her and mother and the sisters all plot an attack on Dooku, an assassination attempt, and they're turned invisible by magic smoke. That was a little strange, but okay.
Well, you know, the Sith had alchemy all throughout the EU. I mean, the idea of witches, as we'll get into in Continuity Corner, isn't necessarily all that new. I didn't find it hard to buy. I mean, maybe something to help augment them getting into the mindset to use the Force that way or something. I could see that making sense. I mean, if we can have an anti-Force being out there like Waru, and we can have half the stuff happen in the Clone Wars, it seems like that has happened, then I can buy the smoke invisibility thing. I'm not sure that I could buy the idea that Dooku didn't see him coming or sense him coming, but then again, he was asleep.
Yeah, I actually didn't have as much issue with that as I implied. Reading the comics and seeing the things that the Sith did do through their alchemy and experimentation, then yeah, that wasn't really that far of a stretch as far as what we've seen previously in EU.
Made Dooku look like the most crazy badass ever. He was terrifying.
Did anybody else think Quidditch, when they pulled out the little needle with the poison or whatever, it really reminded me of, what's it called, the Seeker? Is that what it is? Or I guess the Seeker is the person. Whatever the little ball is you're supposed to chase to
it's
win
a
the
snitch.
Match. The snitch. There you go. Sounded like they had like a deadly snitch. Count Dooku and the deadly snitch.
We get our second awesome lightsaber duel, and Dooku just whips up on his three shadowy attackers. We see once again, it looks like he's almost going to get smacked down, and he whips out a big Sith Force move, pulls out the Force Lightning instead of the Force Choke this time. But it was some pretty intense action. And then he throws him out the window. Very Empire Strike-ish.
The Sith lightning actually made me jump. I was not expecting it to that level. Like, they really caught me off guard. So I just like started in my chair and kind of did this like, whoa. That was really cool. It made him look really pretty badass. He was scary.
And the sound on that popped. I mean, maybe it's just, you know, Cartoon Network for me or my speaker setup. But when he did the Force lightning, the pop of it starting startled me. Like, I could see him using it at some point within the battle, but it was just like, whoa, what the heck was that, you know, when it happened? I mean, it was a pretty intense battle. Two really good lightsaber duels in one episode. We were sitting there watching it, and I don't know if you're familiar with the older reference, I guess from earlier, I guess last decade now, of the from the X-Men, I'm the Juggernaut, B-word, so to speak. As soon as he started whooping up on them, my under the breath was, because I was Dracula! I mean, I was amazed by this battle.
Well, you guys, you know, it's funny, since we talked about this during the C5 show, I still loved how, you know, Dooku in the middle of the night just keeps his lightsaber on the nightstand. It's like, you know, I own a 9mm gun and I have it kind of tucked away for, you know, in case you need to use it in the middle of the night, but it's not just sitting on my nightstand. I just think that's awesome. And granted, he doesn't have kids. He lives alone. It's just, you know, it's not like it's going to go off in the middle of the night, but I just think it's funny. It's like, oh, there's a burglar of the house. Let me grab my lightsaber.
So the assassination attempt fails. And they return to Mother, and wait, she has another plan. A plan to provide Dooku with protection. Was that her plan all along? These Sith have a way of having plans within plans.
Yeah, she struck me as being, like, almost too nice to Asajj Ventress. Like, oh, you'll get your revenge. Here, we'll give you, have this dart. Here, take some people. It'll be great. Like, you know, and that seemed really weird for someone that they had given up to a slave trader. So I'm interested to see what goes on with her. She's going to be interesting, I think. She's scary, too, with her, like, the weird vocal things that they're doing with her. She's really an intimidating character. So I'm hoping to see a lot more from her. She's cool.
I like Dooku just being willing to accept the help. I mean, granted, it makes sense under the circumstances. He's just gone through a tough battle. He's still woozy from the drugs or whatever. He seems like he's kind of spent. And he's like, yes, I'll accept the help. Presumably because I guess he knows that Darth Maul came from there. So that maybe he's actually willing to work with them or something. But I would think that, you know, were I a Sith Lord, I'd be sitting there saying, gee, I was just attacked by three people who in the Force felt like evil witch chicks. Maybe I shouldn't trust for protection from the evil witch chick.
Or he'd been darted, and his senses were dulled. They felt like evil Sith dudes, maybe. I don't know.
It's like Hitler turning and asking for help from the Jewish Society of Germany or something.
Wow. But do we know that Dooku knew about Darth Maul? I guess that's maybe something we'll find out in the coming episodes.
Beats me. But if not, it just seems to add a little less credulity to why he would accept Mother Talzin's help. You know, and it wasn't even that Mother Talzin initially sent Asajj Ventress to him. It's not like, well, we sent Asajj, and since she didn't work out, we'll send you another. Because he got Asajj off of Ratatak, the snare drum kind of planet, from Ratatak back during the Tartakovsky series. So, and they even reinforced that here, presumably, because she was taken away as a child. So I'm not sure where that trust of Talzin comes in, unless this is just another one of those tests of Talzin, whether the plot within plot, perhaps, is he's wondering, what's your game, lady, and is going to see how it plays out. That, I could buy more.
Their little phone call exchange, too, did imply some sort of familiarity, because, you know, when she first pops up, he knows exactly who she is, and he's like, you know, it's been a while, and it makes me wonder maybe if they've conducted some other unsavory business together for some other mutual means.
Back during the summer of love. He got his first real six string, et cetera, et cetera.
If the first line out of Dooku is similar to Hondo and he asks if Savage is his.
That's not mine, is it?
They're just recycling lines now.
Oh, he has horns. He must be related to my mother-in-law.
All right. So we leave it at that, and we are set up for Monster.
But before we get into next week's preview, I'm sure there's something down Continuity Corner about this episode. Right, Nathan?
That's right, Dan. Let's take a look at Night Sisters. This episode, from a continuity perspective, is really an expanded universe fan's dream episode of The Clone Wars. It's not flawless, but for once we see the cartoon series adding to the EU in the same way the EU sort of adds to itself, by taking previously existing backstory and basically saying, yeah, but see, here's this part of their life story which fits in with the rest that you didn't already know. Or what we told you was true from a certain point of view, so here's a bit more truth for you this time around. So, first let's talk concepts. Both Asajj Ventress and Mother Talzin were based on concept art for the prequels. Ventress was a potential female Sith for Attack of the Clones, whereas Talzin was a possible Sith witch for The Phantom Menace. The Ventress concept art was of course picked up by the expanded universe to create the Ventress character. Despite what StarWars.com's erroneous article, The 7-Year Witch, Asajj Ventress, claims about her basically appearing first in the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars cartoon series, she didn't. Her first appearance was in the expanded universe comic Jedi Mace Windu in February of 2003. She then appeared in the pages of Republic, starting with The New Face of War Part 1 in March of 2003, and then, later, she appeared in the Tartakovsky series in November of 2003. Someone over there probably needs to get their facts straight. Now, in January of 2004, we were given a glimpse into Ventress's past in the Republic tale Hate and Fear. Originally, based on information in actual stories and in source materials, it was said that she was a Ratataki girl whose parents were killed by a local warlord's goons. Then she was saved and discovered as a Force-sensitive by Jedi Knight Kai Narek, who was no longer technically part of the Jedi Order. He trained her until local warlords managed to kill Narek, which was the act that pushed Ventress to the dark side. She would eventually take that to the next level by making a point of impressing Dooku in the arena, seen in the Tartakovsky series, which began her recruitment and training under Dooku. This episode introduces some new background elements that are not necessarily contradictory, thanks to Katie Lucas making it a point, as described by Dave Filoni in this week's video commentary, to delve into her EU background when creating the episode. Now we know that she was not a native Ratataki, or a native of Ratatak. That's a really hard word to say and really easy to confuse with Rakatan, which is a totally different species. Instead, we now know that she wasn't a native of Ratatak. She is instead the child of a Night Sister, whose name we did not get, on Dathomir, which accounts for her having hair at one point in the flashbacks rather than being a bald Ratataki. She was taken away by a slaver named Halstead in order to protect the rest of her Night Sister clan from being plagued by the slavers. We next see her master slash owner slash guardian slash slaver guy killed on Ratatak, and it appears like that's Halstead himself. Presumably, she could be said to have been taken from Dathomir to Ratatak and sold to the parents that are mentioned in earlier EU materials, maybe with Halstead still there, or somehow on the parents' payroll, or, you know, some other tweak to the backstory to allow Halstead to still be there, yet have her to be left alone when, quote, parents were killed. That or part of the backstory could easily be a lie also, given that it isn't something elaborated upon in any real depth. So there's a minor contradiction there. I'm expecting us to probably wind up seeing a fix for it. Suffice to say, though, we again see, as in the EU, her exhibit her Force abilities when confronted by the killers on Ratatak, who are Weequay in this interpretation, and the Jedi who finds her, who is Kai Narek, according to Dave Filoni, takes her with him to train, just as in the EU. We don't see anything about Kai's relationship or lack thereof with the overall Jedi Order in those flashbacks either, so presumably that part of the backstory can remain just fine. We then see Kai Narek killed by a Weequay on Ratatak, which certainly suggests the events in her previous backstory, just with the specificity that the Warlord's goons were Weequay, not native Ratataki. This then pushes her to the dark side, as previously described in the EU, and we see her in her previous The Clone Wars cartoon series costume when hooking up with Dooku in a manner that's indicative of the events of the Tartakovsky series, just with a slightly different costume. Thus, so far, her background seems to have been elaborated upon with tiny tweaks, but not wholly overwritten or contradicted in major ways. Frankly, the biggest gripe, other than wondering about her, quote, parents that are mentioned in the EU, is that she has two green lightsabers, hers and Narek's, rather than those being one blue and one green in one of the flashbacks. As for Mother Talzin, she's a new character, based on Episode 1 concept art, but the Night Sisters and the idea of witches in Star Wars go back much further than that. The history of witches in Star Wars animated series begins with the witch Morag, who first appeared in the Ewoks cartoon series' first episode, The Cries of the Trees, in September 1985. Then in November of 1985, we saw the first Night Sister, or a character that was later retconned to be a Night Sister, technically, in Ewoks The Battle for Endor, thanks to the character of Charl, played by Cyan Phillips. The Night Sisters themselves, under that name, first appeared in Dave Wolverton's The Courtship of Princess Leia in 1994, which introduced the planet Dathomir, its force-using female-dominated society of witches, and their dark side counterparts, the Night Sisters themselves. Over the years, we've seen the lore of Dathomir develop to include renegade male clans, a few males popping up in relation to female clans, and numerous standout characters, including young Jedi Knight Tennel Kaa, mother of Jason Solo's daughter, Alana Solo, who is a major character, albeit as a young child, in the current Fate of the Jedi novel series. The Night Sisters first entered the Clone Wars cartoon series tie-in materials with the Jedi Alliance video game, which we recently learned takes place during the Clone Wars film. It was that video game appearance in 2008 on the Nintendo DS that led to the idea of bringing them into the TV series proper. For what it's worth, speaking of Dathomir, we've not ever seen Dathomir that I can recall at least with red skies and such, but this will probably be explained away as a matter of time of day or season or something like that, similar to how Star Trek attempted to explain away different sky colors for Vulcan in earlier and more modern incarnations. I'm really not too worried about that particular alteration. Then again, I'm a guy who usually sees all the different interpretations of various Star Wars planets in different source materials as something that's sort of commonplace, so this really isn't something that would rub me the wrong way either way, unless it was something like Ryloth not being tidally locked anymore. Other returning or new continuity items in this episode would include quite a few things. Just as a quick run through here, we have Obi-Wan's new costume. We have a new tactical droid named TJ-912 that references Battlestar Galactica with the By Your Command slogan. We have the new Twi'lek scavenger, Ratch, not named in the episode but named in the episode guide, and his ship, the Raider, also not named until the episode guide, which is really just a retooled model from Gon Nok's Vulture's Claw from Season 1. We see the first Clone Wars cartoon series appearance of the oft-referenced and rarely seen Sereno, Dooku's planet. We have the return of Ventress's Ginevex-class or Fanblade Starfighter from the Tartakovsky series and later EU materials. We have new Night Sisters, Talzin, of course, but also Naleth, Karras, Talia, and Asajj's unnamed mother. And we have the surprise return and destruction of the Resolute, Anakin's flagship, basically, since the beginning of this series. Now, we're told on the StarWars.com episode guide, by the way, that while the ship is the Resolute that's being destroyed, we also know from the episode guide that Ullerin did survive. I also think, though you can correct me on this if I'm wrong here, that this is the first time we've seen Ventress in this particular costume, which is based on her original concept art. I know for sure that when we saw her in ARC Troopers, she was still in her original Clone Wars costume that we see in the flashback here to her first encounter with Dooku in this episode. Lastly, and I find this rather ironic, both Ventress's Jedi Master, Kai Narek, and her Sith Lord Master, Dooku, are portrayed in this episode by the same voice actor, Corey Burton. I like the symmetry there.
Thank you, Nathan, for that trip down Continuity Corner. We did get one voicemail this week.
Hey, guys, this is Josh. Call about this week's episode, Night Sisters. And I just have to say, this was the best episode I have ever seen. Just everything that was hyped up to be, it was just excellent. Just from the start. I mean, I've seen Darth Sidious a couple times, and I don't know why, but his voice never seemed to fit. But this week, I think someone new played him, but he was just great. I loved how he told Dooku that you have to destroy your apprentice because you may be plotting for her to destroy him. I just thought that was just great. I loved because lightsaber fights, they always seem to have this normal ending, whether it's Ventress or Grievous. They come after whoever, Obi-Wan or Anakin. They chop off their hand or, you know, lose a lightsaber, and Grievous or Ventress runs away. That's mainly how the lightsabers, that's normally when they fight with lightsabers, that's how it works. But the whole entire lightsaber fights were way different than they normally are. I especially love the callback to episode 3 where Obi-Wan smashes into the hangar. But I just love how Ventress, how suddenly she has this force choking ability. Like, I never saw her use it before. So I love that. I love just all the growth with Ventress about how I especially loved also looking back at Ventress's life. I love that. Especially with, you know, the Jedi who was supposed to train her, and that was just great. I loved how Dooku ordered that ship to try to blow up Ventress's ship. I just loved all, I especially love the Night Sisters. I mean, just the whole entire episode, it just had just about like no flaws. I loved Count Dooku in this episode. That was one of my biggest complaints, especially about like the movie, is that it's Dooku, he was never something special. I always thought in the prequels that Dooku should have been killed and it should have been Darth Maul who had lived. But Dooku taking on three Night Sisters at a time, still, you know, he can't see very well and just lightning them all right out of the window. I just loved it. Dooku was great. Ventress was great, which was completely unexpected for me. I just loved the whole entire episode. The only thing that I did think was a little off on the thing, which doesn't make any impact on my whole entire view of the episode, but the tactical droid had a female voice. I thought that was a little weird. But yeah, I was expecting the normal, I think it was Matthew Wood who normally played the tactical droid, but you know, that's a minor little chip inside the episode. The episode was perfect all the way around. As for next week, I think it's called Monster. Oh, I just can't wait for that one either. I'm especially looking forward to Savage Opress, and, well, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see how it plays out. So, thanks again. I love the show. Bye.
All right, Josh, thank you for calling in. Remember, if you would like to leave us a voicemail, let us know what you thought of the latest episode. You can contact us at 415-508-JEDI. Leave us a message, and you too may be on the next episode of Republic Forces Radio Network. So next week, we get Monster. Well, we will finally get to meet Savage Opress, who we've heard so much about, seen so much about. And just from the little snippets that we've seen, including this preview, I think Savage is going to put the whooping on some peoples.
Yeah, so really looking forward to next week's episode. I mean, I wish they could have doubled up to the episodes this week or given us more than just a half hour because we've, you know, been several weeks out. And so I really can't wait to see how Savage Opress fits into this and what this double cross of Dooku's going to look like with Mother Talzin, you know, contacting him like we saw in this week's episode and, you know, how that's going to all play out. And so I think it's going to be fun. I can't wait to see all this come together. So looking forward to it.
I'm very excited to see where it goes, especially as they give the background of how he ties in to other characters and everything. I mean, he almost feels like a gimmick character because they're playing him up so much, but I think that based on how well this episode was carried out, I have good expectations of what next episode's going to do. So maybe he is a character that's kind of gimmicky, like a Boba Fett initially, but use him well, and he can gain the same kind of fan following for legitimate reasons that Boba Fett eventually did. I am very optimistic about it, especially... You know who's doing the voice of Opress, Tarjay, right? It's Clancy Brown. I keep thinking of him as the enemy back, it was a Kurgan was his name, back in the original Highlander, and thinking if that voice is what we get for Savage Opress, that voice is going to scare people, let alone his visage.
Have we heard him talk or say yes, master, in an episode or two, or a preview or two? He sounds pretty rough and dark, so.
Mollish?
Very, well, yeah. Mollish. Not so British, though. I don't remember him sounding as British.
I'm excited. I haven't been this excited for Clone Wars in a while, barring that big time jump we got moving into Pursuit of Peace. I'm very positive on it right now, and I hope that it continues to live up to it.
I'm excited about it, too. This is what I think Clone Wars should have done from the start, which they kind of did, yes, with Ventress and bringing her in for the micro-series. They needed their own villain, not somebody who has stuff in books like Boba Fett, or other movies like Grievous even, had their own baddie all to themselves that they could create, lay out every single thing he has done, and kill him before the end. All right, that's going to do it for our discussion of Night Sisters. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Look forward to seeing everybody back here again next week for Monster. Everybody have a good night, and thanks for joining us.
See you next time. Thanks.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.
All right, thanks, Dan.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Ingonza Media Incorporated, copyright 2010, all rights reserved.
You're ringing again, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, actually. Yeah, let me take this.
I'm checking my phone. Like, who's ringing?
I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, I'm not ringing.
Sorry, guys.
I was like, yes. I guess I was grateful to see that it wasn't on the nightstand next to his pills. But
especially if you get the two screwed up.
Dentures or something like.
He accidentally puts his lightsaber in instead of his dentures. That would be disastrous.